in that pledge of support to finalize your promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
Not-for-profit media for social and economic justice. Online at houston.indymedia.org.
Hello, Houston, and welcome to the Houston Indie Media Show. I just want to remind you that actually our online presence is only on Facebook, and you can check us out at facebook.com/houston.indymedia. We have a great show for you tonight. In studio, we have with us Benjamin Franklin from Tar Sands Blockade. In light of the new yet not surprising information just released regarding the Houston FBI spying on nonviolent activists, we have Ben Franklin in studio with us, so thank you for joining us, Benjamin.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
We've asked him to come in to discuss with us some of the issues being swept under the rug and bring to light some of the more insidious things done by supposed law enforcement to the people in the frontline communities whose daily lives are affected by the petrochemical industry. And we also wanted you to hear firsthand what the folks from the blockade have to say. But first, we have some thank yous to listeners who pledged to our show last week. I'd like to give a big thank you to James Moran from everyone here at the Collective from San Francisco, who really appreciates our mostly women and people of color programming. So thank you so much, James from San Francisco. And also Wayne from Houston, who also made a very generous donation to us. We'd also like to thank Lena and Solidarity Houston for helping us to pitch. And I think our listeners really responded to not only our great programming, but also the announcement of the reopening of this great space. So you can check them out online on Facebook also if you search for Solidarity Houston. So to get our interview started, I'd like to read a statement to you all from one member of Tar Sands Blockade. The FBI has been harassing and actively repressing communities of organizers for decades. We're not surprised. We're also not deterred. Movements for climate and environmental justice are activating people from diverse political backgrounds to take direct action to defend themselves from threats like Keystone XL pipeline. People are stepping out of the blind alleys of electoral politics and building grassroots power, and that's scary for people who want a monopoly on power. So again with us tonight, we have Benjamin Franklin from the Tar Sands Blockade. Benjamin, can you start off by giving us, for those who might not know, a background of Houston FBI spying on activists against the petroleum industry?
Yeah, so this has actually gone on for a while. I was also part of Occupy Houston, which had an action where undercover Austin police officers had infiltrated Occupy Austin and then set up Austinites and Houston Occupy members to do a action against the Port of Houston, which is a major hub of the petrochemical industry and it's the highest tonnage port in the United States, actually. And that we found out from a different Freedom of Information request on that there were apparently by some unnamed and redacted party, you know, violent threats being planned out against Occupy Houston quote unquote leaders, explicitly based on if we successfully disrupted operation of the port, that they would, you know, shoot us. So, and then the FBI knew about this, and then despite normal procedures about approaching people when they might be part of a threat, didn't tell anyone, and in fact had denied they had this information and had to be forced out of them through court orders by, you know, actually an appeal, I believe, to a federal judge. So you had that incident. Then you have this incident, which again comes from a Freedom of Information request, though this one, at least we didn't, you know, the reporters didn't have to go to federal judges, based on how in 2013, you had the Houston FBI office violated its own procedures about how to handle, you know, political and other sensitive cases by consulting their own.
That was in the BBC, I believe, this week, or another British
publication. It was The Guardian.
The Guardian,
It was
I
The Guardian and
yes.
Earth Island Journal who first broke the story. And yeah, so they violated their own procedures about how they're supposed to open these kind of investigations, because there's supposed to be checks, especially after the COINTELPRO and the Church Committee, you know, on these sort of investigations to prevent, you know, suppression of speech and political activity. They violated that. The FBI agent's own statement about why they were doing it was were repeating TransCanada talking points about the necessity of the Keystone XL pipeline for oil and national security and jobs, which is particularly suspicious since less than a month earlier, you had had a joint conference between TransCanada and the FBI in Oklahoma State, where they were specifically, the agenda item was about the threat of protesters to the construction of Keystone XL. So you had a real revealing again, who does Houston's FBI agents see themselves as working for? You know, which apparently is industry.
Right. There's some obvious connections between the FBI agents and the industry. So you were spied on, but you were successful, though.
Well, exactly. I mean, like I said, it's not a surprise. There's the entire history of the FBI is spying on activists who would challenge, you know, white supremacist capitalism. You know, from J. Edgar, it's J. Edgar Hoover's baby. They still meet in a building named after him. And then, of course, they spied on us. We were successful and powerful. We built a diverse, politically and socially, and you know, diverse group of people. You know, bringing in environmentalists, Native Texans, people from the cities, people from rural, people from across the country, to engage in direct, effective action against the construction of the Keystone XL Southern Leg. And while they were eventually able to build it, we put them years behind schedule and cost them, by their own account, when TransCanada sued tar sands blockade, we cost them over $5 million in the first 2 months. So we were being successful, and therefore we were a threat, and so they focused on us. I mean, of course they did. That's what happens. And that also reveals... I don't think I'm the only person that Houston's FBI agents have ever broken their rules for. I don't think the two times that we know about are the only two times. And so it makes me wonder, as a person who has a lot of privilege, who are they spying on right now? Who do they always spy on? And the traditional answers, again, are people of color.
So on that note, the spying... was, I guess, according to the documents, you think triggered by tar sands folks taking pictures and interviewing at Hartman Park, which is in Manchester. So can you tell us a little bit about what is Hartman Park and also just how that speaks to the surveillance and harassment that folks in Manchester who live in Manchester deal with all the time?
Sure. All right. So Hartman Park is a city of Houston park that's in Manchester, the Manchester neighborhood of Houston, Texas. It is surrounded by industry. It backs up to the Valero refinery. On one side are storage tanks, and then on the other side is the Flare Tower.
I just want to point out this is like a children's park.
There's
an apparatus.
You can get wonderful Tejas, Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services, which is a grassroots group that's been working to try to address environmental racism in Houston for decades, founded by Juan and Brian Paras, have some wonderfully terrible pictures of children playing on the playgrounds while a giant tower of flame burns over them, which the EPA is just now finally admitting does not actually eliminate most of the pollution. So you have children right near this flame. The University of Texas and the EPA's own numbers say that children in the Manchester area and within 2 miles of the Ship Channel have a 54% higher leukemia rate than children in the rest of Houston, which already has a higher number than most. That's Hartman Park. It's a small public park that's surrounded by industrial pollution. The people who live in Manchester are mainly Latino, and they're mostly working class and poor. And they are trapped in a neighborhood that has horrible environmental damage and pollution. And it's also the Valero plant is one of the two refineries that's in the city of Houston limits. The other one is a LyondellBasell plant, which is also next to the Manchester neighborhood. And both of them, at one point, said that they would be processing tar sands crude brought by, you know, bitumen, to be more accurate, brought down by the Keystone XL pipeline. Because we wanted to focus on not just the through points where the people who are having their homes and lands taken from them and their families threatened in East Texas, but also the people here in Manchester who are already dealing with pollution, but now are going to have to deal with an entire new, more toxic, bitumen product with even more heavy metals and benzene levels than normal for these products, as well as an entire new source of things. So that, because the Valero plant, that's how we found out about it, they were proudly announcing how they were expanding their heavy processing, their cracking, so that they could do more and more of this. So, of course, also do more and more pollution to people here in Manchester. So we started, doing basic, we connected with Tejas, we were doing basic canvassing and talking to people and interviewing people in the neighborhood. And then our volunteers and activists got to encounter some of the exact same harassment that people in Manchester and people like Tejas have dealt with over the years, which is Valero Security will both confront you and also call HPD on you. And they will try to interfere with you being in a public park.
And it's not hard to incite these events.
Oh, no, it's quite easy. Like, There were several examples, so it's entirely possible that one of the ones that was posted on our YouTube channel at the time is actually the one that eventually attracted the attention of the FBI and was flagged through whatever arcane symbiosis of technology and information that they use. Which, of course, if Edward Snowden leaked that, it hasn't come out yet. But it's quite likely that that was actually caught on film of them being harassed for being in a public park. Despite having free speech zones in them, is not actually a thing that you have. And so, yeah, so this is the kind of harassment that happens all the time. In our case, we have the connections to be able to attract media attention to it so that people can find out versus it just being the normal levels of harassment that happen all the time.
So I have a question. I was listening to another radio station that also recently had a pledge drive that I won't mention that is also university based, and they were doing this wonderful interview about how much better the air in Houston is now after the EPA regulations that President Bush put in that everybody complained about. But now the air in Houston is far better, even though they're not able to tell what chemicals are coming out of the flares. This interview even featured Judith, as a matter of fact. Could you just sort of address, what the air is like in Houston? Because it just seemed like there was a lot of spin on this. Because they were saying, the air is better, but we can't really measure it. But the air is better, but we can't measure it.
Yeah, there's two fun things with that. So, it is better because we were basically rock bottom. So, it's like the most improved player kind of award where, when you're terrible, it's really easy to make progress. Another thing is the legal standards here from the Clean Air Act and so forth. The Clean Air Act is basically a misnomer, a purposely misleading name. That it doesn't set a quality for clean. It takes what's the current industrial best standards from when they decide to measure it. They pick whoever's doing the least bad job, and that's the floor that you're supposed to achieve. And then you get to lobby and work your way around actually getting there. So that's exactly how you end up with Houston's situation, where we've never been in compliance on ozone levels. And we still have ridiculous diesel particulate matters, which no one, even industrial people, freely admit are horrible and deadly because it's undeniable. But you still have polluted air. So, honestly, it reminds me of the classic, Malcolm X quote, you don't stab someone with a 9-inch knife and then pull it out 6 inches and talk about the progress. I mean, that's a lot of what happens here.
Well, we're going to take a quick music break. I hope we're going to be listening to the Tar Sands Boogie. And then, yes, we will be listening to the Tar Sands Boogie. And we'll be back with Benjamin Franklin from Tar Sands Blockade.
Get about it.
And we're back to the Houston Indie Media Show with Benjamin Franklin from Tar Sands Blockade. We have been discussing the common practice of spying on nonviolent activists. So, Benjamin, I'd like to ask you if you could talk about some... It's not unique to Houston that Tar Sands Blockaders have encountered government officials who have been pretty much working or have been directed to do something by folks from the petroleum industry.
Oh, yeah, it's in no way unique to us. We just ended up with some of the best documented cases of it. So, yeah, you had an action camp done by a sister group, Great Plains Tar Sands, you know, resistance. And they were doing a training thing about nonviolent resistance. And two undercover Oklahoma police officers joined the camp and then later disrupted their protests. So people weren't even allowed to assemble at the site of the pumping station. You know, you've had FBI agents, you know, cold calling people in the Northwest, you know, and not showing up at their homes and at the homes of their families and saying that they, you know, they want to talk to them, which is very dangerous because the FBI, if you lie to an FBI agent, that's a federal crime, but also they traditionally do not record any conversation they have with you. So you're totally in a place where it's your word against theirs.
Catch
about
22.
If you. Exactly. So it's why it's very, you never want to talk to any federal agent without, you know, legal representation. That would definitely be my advice and the advice of any defense attorney I've ever talked to. And then, you know, you have a long case of this with anti-fracking groups have had all sorts of harassments happen against them. You've also had harassment happening in Michigan, you know, with Enbridge Energy, which has multiple tar sands pipelines, including the Seaway pipeline, where they took a natural gas pipeline. They repurposed it but did not refurbish it. So even by the industry's own engineer standards of what's quote-unquote safe for bitumen, this wouldn't qualify. And they decided they would just reverse the flow and pump tar sands through it anyway.
And of course, Michigan's an interesting case because economically it's a very depressed part of the country. So don't think that that wasn't a strategic decision as far as maybe people wouldn't make as much noise as in other places.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that was part, again, that's part of why, you know, we were so threatening, I think, to the FBI was the industry assumed that Texas would be a place where no one would protest. And you have that again, like rural, poor Michigan, obviously no one's going to bother there. Oklahoma, again, you know, Utah is a conservative state who's going, and again, you have a tar sands mine, the first one that they're trying to actually refine tar sands from in the United States is in Utah. And then you had people, including a former tar sands blockade member who was arrested and charged with rioting for being outside of the jail so that they could welcome people who were getting out. So, I mean, they've definitely, you know, the boot has come down pretty hard. You've had a lot, you know, you have, and honestly, I think it's very, and you have a similar effect. It's something, there's a whole book about it called How Green is the New Red, comparing scares about so-called environmental terrorism and domestic, you know, and environmental extremists with, you know, the old communist scare.
Which is interesting because you also have this phenomenon, too, of greenwashing or green branding at a corporate level. And then we also had several people last year who were applauding President Obama for not just rubber stamping the Keystone XL pipeline. What are your comments about
that? Yeah, so that's a pet peeve of mine. And it especially bothers me, and it's come up a lot in the coverage of this. So even when you had, speaking of that news station that had its own pledge drive recently, they had a Texas-based reporter interviewing the British reporter who of course wouldn't know better, but they're talking about this. They're talking about the spying on us in the Keystone Pipeline, and they're framing it all as if this was only in the Northwest, when actually the TransCanada's original project was to build one contiguous pipeline. They ran into more resistance than they expected, so they split the project up. And then President Obama actually expedited the construction of the southern leg from Cushing, Oklahoma to Port Arthur. And in the by removing, he went to Cushing, Oklahoma, did a whole thing about how he was promoting industry, promoting, you know, domestic production. And actually doing so is also set a precedent for removing restrictions on a bunch of natural gas pipelines as well. So it actually also helped feed into this liquid natural gas exports. So you've had, you know, so it was... So, yeah, we already are dealing with these issues. The people of Port Arthur, which is almost all black, and again, poor. And have been again poisoned by, for decades by industrial pollution, by the petrochemical industry, are once again dealing with more pollution from that. And then you had the Y leg of the which would come down to Houston so they could feed into here. So that's, I mean, we're already dealing with it. And then this gets us to the final thing, which is this is part of the reason they're expanding the Port of Houston so they can run even larger tanker ships, because all of this was always for export.
And also, just to let listeners know, in terms of Port Arthur, I was there about a year and a half, 2 years ago. They still have damage from Hurricane Ike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to let you know just how socioeconomically challenged this community is. Ike was, well, let's see, Ike was about 5-6 years ago,
right.
And that community still has washed out ships and parts of the city and parts of their dock that were never restored to pre-Ike levels.
Mm-hmm. And with Katrina and Ike and Hurricane Sandy, we know for a fact that you have discrimination in the responsiveness of who gets paid for damages. And again, it falls under the classic systemic racism that, you know, is what happens with all of these things. These are all interconnected oppressions. These people end up with their lands. I mean, and that's, for me, that was part of what the Keystone Pipeline especially is like. It's a project to further pollute and destroy Indigenous people's land in Canada, to cut through people's land and steal people's land throughout North America and threaten our water sources, to come to an area in Texas that's already horribly polluted, to add to its pollution so that it can then be put in tanker ships to be sailed across the world.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about your case also?
Tar Sands Blockade, for those of you who didn't know, we famously had a tree blockade where we were directly in the path of Keystone XL's southern leg. People were in the trees for over 90 days. I was not one of them, but I was part of the support staff, and one of the things I did was I myself and a partner attached ourselves to one of the backhoes that was clear cutting through to them. This was actually the morning that they were supposed to be in court to see if they could even legally be on this piece of property. So I really felt like I wasn't the one in the legal right of way, and TransCanada clearly wasn't. But the police officers of Wood County did not agree with me.
Shocking.
Well, it's funny you say that, since they did end up tasering us repeatedly as well as pepper spraying us. And all this was while we were being observed and they were communicating with TransCanada employees. So I'm currently engaged in a civil suit with Wood County and TransCanada over that abuse. And again, I mean, I doubt I'm the first person that Wood County has decided they should use, that they should torture into compliance. I doubt I'm the only person that this is the only time that TransCanada has used its influence over law enforcement. In fact, we now know that that's happened lots of times. It's happened in Oklahoma. They obviously had influence with the Houston FBI office. You know, they were employing off-duty police officers and sheriff deputies to provide their security throughout Wood County and the rest of Texas and into Oklahoma. Oklahoma, again, you had undercover cops infiltrating a peaceful political action so they could disrupt it, again, in service of a corporate interest. I mean, this goes on and on.
My last question to you for the night is, do you think the FBI is listening right now?
Well, I would hope so. And if so, I hope they remember to donate.
We have a few announcements before we end our show, but maybe you can give Benjamin, you can give some contact info for anyone who wants to know more about Tar Sands Blockade.
Oh yes, tarsandsblockade.org, and then also we're on Facebook, you know, facebook.com/tarsandsblockade.
And currently, right now, the word around town is turning 10. They have an event that is free and open to the public happening. It started at 7. It's going on until 10 p.m. this evening at Cafe Brazil. I encourage everyone to go out, listen to local poets, to share some of their spoken word. Also, tomorrow, just to let listeners out there know, the Harrison Kumi Foundation has a Dance for Water in Uganda concert, and that's going to be at Bohemios tomorrow night, 708 Telephone Road at May 16th. That is kicking off at 8 p.m. There's going to be a raffle of a plasma TV, although, of course, we want you listening to radio, not watching TV, but just in case occasionally you do have that option. And also, you can meet Harrison Kumi's 90.1 KPFT 90.1 FM Club 20. Come and dance until you drop. This is also a free event, and all of the proceeds do go to providing clean water to the people of Uganda. And so I absolutely encourage everyone out there, if you are free Friday night, or I'm sorry, to go check out Cafe Brazil right now, if you're free right now, and then tomorrow night supporting Harrison Kumi's event, who we once shared airspace with here on Friday evenings, but we still do under the larger umbrella of 100% listener-sponsored KPFT. Also, for listeners out there, in case you did not know, this week was the 45th anniversary of the bombing that took us off the air by the Ku Klux Klan. We are very much still on the air, and as Venetia said at the top of the program, we thank everybody who pledged to help keep us on the air. We hope all of you continue to do that, to put your money where your ears are, because while we are a grassroots, very progressive radio station, we still have to function in a capitalist society. So we appreciate everyone out there. Special thanks to Jacob and Courtney, our board ops for the revolution. I'm Rachel signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.
Tap your toes to music legends during the Sounds Like Houston Thursday concerts presented by UHD at Discovery Green this spring. Every Thursday night through June 25th, enjoy free outdoor concerts showcasing the best musicians from Texas and the Gulf Coast. The weekly Thursday concert series is co-sponsored by 90.1 KPFT Houston. This week, enjoy the music of 1965 with the Fab Five, Picture Book and Friends, and Summer Street, playing the top hits and choice cuts from this stellar year of rock and roll. Expect hits from The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, Sir Douglas Quintet, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, The Who, The Kinks, and more. Plus, Discovery Green is giving away prizes to the best dressed. So come in your most dazzling 60s attire. Concerts begin at 6:30 every Thursday night. For more details on the Sounds Like